Speaking of people who like to hold on to things.
I don't know about you, but I'm a digital hoarder. Like, I like to keep everything.
A digital hoarder? Like, you never delete anything from your photo albums or...
No. Yeah, because you never know. I mean, I'm nostalgic, right?
You never know. Yeah.
So, is digital hoarding any less debilitating than tangible hoarding of 3D objects? To explore this question, I spoke to David Markowitz.
I am a scientist and an engineer, and currently I am a program manager for IARPA.
IARPA stands for Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity,
which is the high-risk research arm of the U.S. intelligence community.
We all know that our physical stuff takes up too much space, but what most of us don't know is that our digital stuff is also taking up an immense amount of physical space.
Maybe I can tell you briefly about how I came to this problem and then why we're pursuing this particular solution.
Okay, so David has a PhD in molecular biology and neuroscience, and a while back, he was working on a neural network project for IARPA, basically studying how the human brain stores information.
And so we were generating petabytes of neural imaging data, mapping the synaptic connections between, you know, very large networks of neurons.
Petabytes. If you have a backup hard drive for your computer, like I do, that might max out at about 1 or 2 terabytes. A petabyte is 1,000 of those. So David was generating libraries of little hard drives for this one project.
It was costing us $100,000 a month to store these data in the cloud.
Again, one small project for one small arm of one government agency, drop in the bucket, and was costing $100K a month just to keep and maintain.
Collectively, the amount of data that we produce as a species, right, is millions, billions of times larger than that.
For most of us, our videos and photos, all our data, it just magically floats up into the cloud, and that's where it lives, in some other realm. But data, the cloud, lives in real physical space. It has to be stored on servers, like those huge stadium-sized rooms you see in movies with thousands of humming, blinking computers and usually one lonely tech guy wandering around maintaining them. Companies like Google and Facebook need a ton of these stadiums just to operate. And these stadiums, they just exist all over the world, and we keep generating more and more data. This takes an enormous amount of resources, money, space, labor.
One of the limitations of today's storage paradigms is there's a phenomenon called bit rot.
Bit rot.
Bit rot.
Bit rot. Basically, your little spinning disk hard drives with all your data, your bits, it's a physical thing that wears down over time. Same deal with these huge server farms.
Exactly. And so one of the major drivers of the cost of modern data storage is that you have to do regular integrity checks.
Practically speaking, all this tech needs to be replaced every couple of years, which is so much work. So David's back working on this brain project, and he's kind of seeing the big picture. And he goes and he talks with these huge tech companies like Google and Facebook, asking like, hey, is this sustainable?
And I realized that everybody is facing this looming calamity in the data storage space, where they won't be able to scale further.
There's a ceiling on how much we can actually physically store right now.
Right. The roadmaps for continuing to meet the demand for large-scale storage just trailed off to question marks beyond a 5-year window.
It's a real physical problem with seemingly no backup plan. So it got David asking himself our question. What are we going to do with all this stuff?
And so I began exploring opportunities to develop alternative storage paradigms. And so that led me to DNA.
Yeah, that DNA, the double helix, the molecule that stores our genetic footprint. Remember, David's a neuroscientist, so he thought, you know what's really good at storing data? The human brain.
Because DNA uses these super tiny nanometer scale bits, right? These 4 bases to encode information. That also allows it to store information much more densely than any other medium. in existence.
DNA is made up of four molecules, four bases.
Adenine, thymine, guanine, and cytosine.
We call them A, T, C, and G for short.
And you string together physical molecules in order to encode information.
Kind of like how zeros and ones are currently used for our computer data, except our bodies use four letters in different sequences to recreate what we physically are.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really wild. Just like we can use a computer to, say, break down your cat video into zeros and ones and store that code on a solid computer chip, we also have the technology to break down that same video into A, T, C, and G molecules and store that in a drop of liquid solution.
An actual droplet in water, for example.
Put that water in a test tube, on a shelf, and that tube could have millions or even billions of strands of synthetic DNA data.
So you can imagine a modern data center, rather than having huge racks of hard drives, you have a couple racks of droplets.
And then when you need to access that data, a robot might pull a droplet off the shelf, drop it into a sequencer that will read those molecules, and boom, all your cat videos. And with DNA, you do not need to worry about bit rot.
So we've recovered the DNA from a 200,000-year-old horse that's frozen in permafrost. DNA, it's evolved over billions of years to be exquisitely compact and stable under certain conditions.
These droplets can also be hardened into silica, incredibly compact solid beads.
In principle, you could take all the data in the world right now and compress it down in DNA to a volume that's no larger than a ping pong ball.
This is wild. This literally sounds like the stuff of the future.
That's why I've been doing this job for 8 years, because this is basically the coolest job you can find.
It is the stuff of the future, but it's also not. Synthetic DNA storage actually exists now. We know how to do it. And to be clear, David is not the first person to make this work, but he has been a pioneer in making the process scalable to serve these massive tech companies who it really needs to help. And they're taking notice.
There's a very high likelihood that within 5 years, you're going to see DNA storage appliances deployed in data centers. It's near term. It's coming.
DNA data storage is not necessarily something individual consumers need to worry about on their own. We don't have enough data to warrant it. But collectively, the amount of digital stuff that we demand is why this tech exists now. With our physical stuff, it's easy to make an argument that consumers should change their behavior and consume less. But David's more in the camp of, we're human. That's what we do. We like having stuff. And instead of changing the way we consume to facilitate how we store stuff, we need to change the way we store stuff to facilitate how we consume.
It's very difficult to change individual behavior. Not that I personally would want to change my individual behavior, because I love every picture of my kids that I take. But if you look at the marketplace, right? Companies always want to offer us more. They always want to sell us more and improve capabilities.
I got a newer phone last year, and the one I had before was about 5 years old. It had pretty low memory, and sometimes I would go to take a picture, and it'd tell me that I didn't have enough space to take it. So I'd quickly rush into my albums and delete a video maybe, just so I could take this photo in the moment. And it was a pain in the ass, but it definitely made me think more about the moments that I wanted to capture. Somehow made those pictures just a little bit more sacred in the moment. I don't have to do that anymore with my new phone, which is great. But I asked David, if you never have to worry about storage and what you choose to keep, could that make all our digital stuff just a little bit less sacred?
I think there's a very real risk of that happening. I think if we just take for granted that every photo we take on our phones will be stored in perpetuity, maybe it does provide less incentive for us to you know, dwell on those special memories if we know that we can always just come back to it later. I will say that for the national security community, we don't always know the value of data at the time that it's collected. Sometimes the value of data only becomes clear in light of an event that happens in the future. And then you can go back and look at something that explains why it happened, who was responsible, right? And that can be invaluable for helping to keep all of us safe.
And the potential for that does not stop at national security. Basically, information is power. And yeah, having an infinite room in an infinite basement might make the stuff that you squirrel away feel a little less sacred. But David says that we shouldn't have to compromise on how much information we keep, how many hundreds of photos of our families or cats that we take and then totally forget about them. Because you might not need these photos or this information right now, but they could really come in handy someday. You've probably said those exact same words to yourself during a cleaning purge. I know I have. Maybe there is no helping our compulsion to collect and store things. Maybe we'll never really be good at letting go.